Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew is back, and once again thanking you for joining us here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. The day's date is Saturday, June 13th, 2015, and this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting and ultra-exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. So, why don't we just get started by allowing me to introduce the presenter for tonight's program. And she just so happens to be that librarian of MSS. Yep, you might have guessed, Joy Jackson. Yep, JJ is back and doing, you know, one of the things that she likes to do, and that is educate, inform, and entertain you with her versions of OTR surprises. So, without any further delay, I would just ask if everyone could please sit back, grab your favorite drinks and snacks, and enjoy the program. Joy, the microphone is yours.
Thanks, Louise. Welcome to the MSS edition of Treasures Old and New from ART. Tonight, we're going to have a listen to some lost shows from the days of old-time radio. First up, I promised some cold. It's episode 7 of I Love a Mystery, Terror at Frozen Corpse Lodge. It's been snowing all night there, and to some of us, the lodge is located west of Reno, which means Donner Pass. Here's Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard and Renaud LaBeouf as Doc.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery.
O'clock in the morning, with the snow drifted almost up to the second-story windows of J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. Snowbound in Frozen Corpse Lodge, and more snow falling with a silent relentlessness that gives the feeling of going on forever. And locked in the tool room at the back of the lodge is the corpse of a murdered man. He is the fourth man Gail Stark has kissed in the last month, and who has died violently within 24 hours afterwards. Gail kissed him a friendly goodbye in Reno day before yesterday, and last night, P.O., the caretaker, found him stabbed and frozen in a snowbank between the lodge and the stable. He was just an old friend of Gail's, and had no business way off the beaten track up here near the hunting lodge. That is why Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker are here over the weekend, to find out why the sudden epidemic of violent deaths among the young men Gail knows. And then there's another disturbing event. As a matter of fact, three other disturbing events. One, someone has cut the phone connection with the outside world and has smashed all the radios in the lodge. Two, Bruce Garrett was caught in the act of trying to strangle Gail. Garrett and Gail are engaged, and neither would give any explanation. Three, Mansfield, the venerable butler of the Stark household, has vanished. This is ominous, because Mansfield had promised to tell Jack and Doc a bloody tale of viciousness and desperation the first moment he could slip away to their rooms. But he has disappeared before he could talk. The lodge was ransacked, and the men even poked around outside in the drifts, but in the snow and utter darkness, it was an impossible search. It was so late by now, Jack sent everyone to bed while he and Doc took turns patrolling the upper hall. Thus, everyone was under their eyes except P.O., the caretaker, and Jones, the new butler, who slept in the servant quarters behind the kitchen. And now, at 8 o'clock in the morning...
Jack? Jack, wake up.
Come
on, son, up and at him.
Huh? What's that? What's the matter?
Nothing. You told me you wanted to be woke up at 8 a.m. sharp, so it's 8 a.m.
Oh. Anything happened while I've been asleep?
Nope, everybody's been asleep in the sleep of the dead, seems like. I've been down and routed out P.O. and the new butler, Jones. They just slapping some coffee together so we can start our day out right.
Good.
That bird Jones knows his butler, I reckon. Anyway, he was right down to work in the kitchen like he knowed what he was doing.
He's the real thing, you think?
Sure, so does P.O. He said, "Some of my gun, Senor Jones, you sure are one fine butler, for my goodness sakes."
Uh-huh. How's the weather out?
What weather? Except for snow and more snow, there ain't any.
It's still snowing?
Like it was never going to stop, and the blame stuff's drifted right up under the bedroom windows during the night.
Up to the second story?
I'm a blue and gold hippopotamus if it ain't. Stir that carcass of yours out from under the covers, and you can see for yourself.
Uh-huh. Look, while I'm taking a shower and getting into some clothes, do a job for me, will you?
It's according. What is it?
Go around and knock on all the bedroom doors and get people up.
Huh? What's the hurry?
We're investigating a murder, and I want to find Mansfield.
Okay, but son, folks, he's gonna hate you. Nobody's had more than about 5 hours of sleep.
Go on, and then hurry back. And tell Jerry to snap into something and come here. I want to talk to you two before we tackle the rest.
Okay.
Oh, and one other thing. Be sure that everyone is wide awake before you leave his door. Talk to him a minute.
Through the door, of course.
Yes. I wouldn't recommend walking into anyone's bedroom. And especially keep an eye on our lodger for the night, A.J. Ben.
Yeah, leave it to me. And you'd better snap into it on account of me and Jerry will be back in no time.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Jerry first, I guess.
Hey, what's going on out there?
Hi, Sugarfoot. It's Doc.
Oh, yeah? I thought it was some doggone woodpecker planting acorns for the winter.
They ain't any acorns this time of year. Can I open the door, Crack?
Oh, wait till I pull the covers up to my chin.
Oh, shucks.
Okay, open up. Well, fancy meeting you here, sonny boy.
Hey, cute stuff.
Me, my nose? That's all you can see of me.
No, your hair spread out on the pillow. I always wonder how a girl slept all night and woke up with her hair all combed and beautiful.
Who said she did?
In moving pictures.
Now, that was in pictures. Brother, I've been so tangled up in my hair some nights, I've felt like a mermaid caught in a sardine net.
Trapped like a rat, huh?
No kidding.
How'd you ever get out?
Now, hey, look. Did you come to my door at this time in the morning to exchange wit and humor?
Maybe not, but a little of it don't hurt.
Well, I don't feel very bright until I've had my coffee, so talk fast and then close the door.
Jack wants you to whip into something and come to our rooms for a confab.
Well, have I got time to do 1, 2, 3, 4 on the carpet and brush my teeth?
Yeah, he's taking a shower, but keep moving. I'll pick you up on my way back.
Back from where?
I'm waking everybody up. Ain't that a nice job?
Oh, you can have it.
Yeah, step on it. Bye.
Bye.
Let's see. Next is Jay Irvin himself. Uh-huh.
Yes, who is it?
Mr. Stark, hello. It's Doc Long.
Ah, oh, come in. Come in, Long.
Okay. Hey, you're up and dressed already.
Yes, of course.
But after the night we had last night...
No matter what time I retire, I'm always up and ready to go down by 8 o'clock.
Well, that's what you call habit, I reckon.
Well, I don't know what else you could call it. You wish to see me about something?
Yeah, just that Jack wants me to get everybody up so we can get into this business of young Ogden's murder and Mansfield's disappearance again.
I'm frightfully upset about Mansfield. I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, we better leave that till we all get together. Oh, yeah, I went down and got Pio and the new butler to fix him some coffee.
Good. I'll go down and see what they can do about breakfast.
Good idea. This Jones feller seems to be all right.
I wish I knew who sent him and why.
Just like Bruce Garrett said last night, somebody seemed to know Mansfield was going to disappear, and he was getting ready for it.
Bruce Garrett said that?
He sure did.
I don't understand, Bruce. He isn't the same man at all anymore. Well, I'll go down about breakfast.
Let's see. On the other side of the hall comes Gail's room. Uh-huh.
Yes, who is it?
It's Doc Long, Miss Stark.
Oh, just a minute.
Hey, you didn't need to hop out of bed. I just wanted to tell you, just wanted. Miss Stark, that there's the prettiest doggone bathrobe I just about ever seen.
Bathrobe? Doc, this is a negligee.
It is, huh? Well, honey, when I get married, my sugars are going to wear one of them things all the time.
Oh, Doc, you're wonderful. 10 minutes ago, I thought I'd never laugh again. and here I am. What is it you really came to say?
Jack sent me around to wake everybody up.
Anything more happen?
He just wants everybody around so we can talk to him. Hey, how come you was awake? Don't tell me you got a habit of getting up at this hour every a.m.
No, I've just been too upset to sleep soundly, I guess.
Your throat hurt?
What? Why do you say that?
I mean where that wonderful He-Man you're supposed to marry got his claws into you last night.
I'd rather not discuss Bruce Garrett so early in the morning. What made you think of it?
Why shouldn't I think of it? You got black and blue and orange and green marks on your throat till a person would think you was spoiling.
Really? My throat hadn't hurt much. I hadn't thought to look in the mirror.
Take a look. You'd be interested. I've seen toadstools in damp woods the color of your neck.
Ew, I look horrible.
Yeah, I'd wear a scarf or something around my neck if you didn't want to spoil folks' appetites.
To think that the man I was supposed to marry would do a thing like that.
Yeah, some bridegroom. Why'd he do it?
Oh, he was angry because I brought you and Mr. Packard here. And because Philip Ogden's body was found outside the lodge.
Huh. He was mad at you on account of Ogden's body being found up here?
Yes, he was just too ugly.
Well, that's me and Jack's business, ugliness. So shoot.
Well, he was jealous. He believed Phil Ogden came up here to keep a clandestine meeting with me.
Hey, if he thought that, then it's natural. He came up on Ogden and stabbed him in the back and left his body in a snowbank.
No, I don't think so. Look, I'm getting dreadfully cold standing here in nothing.
Hey, what am I thinking about? Get your clothes on. We can talk all about this later.
Thank you. Mansfield usually brings coffee up. Nothing new about Mansfield, is there?
Uh-uh. But about the coffee, the new guy Jones is making some, and I'll see you get some.
Oh, thank you. You're the kind of gentleman I like knowing, Doc. You're sweet. Bye.
Well, I'll be doggone. Can that sweetheart put the pressure on when she tries? Mm-mm. Next comes Mr. A.J. Ben, who don't even belong here. Hey, don't do that.
Oh, it's you, Long. What's the matter?
Whipping your door open in my face like that scares living daylights out of a feller.
Oh, sorry.
And what the heck you doing up and dressed?
What's wrong with that?
Well, doggone it, Jack told me to come around and wake folks up, and so far Jerry Booker's the only one I've found asleep.
Oh, I think that would be a pretty enjoyable experience.
Huh?
Finding Miss Booker asleep?
Look, Mr. Ben, you seen Bruce Garrett get his teeth knocked in last night on account of Jerry Booker.
I did indeed.
Well, just remember it, if you please.
Oh, I most certainly will. And now what can I do for you?
Just as I said, Jack wants everybody up and round. But while I'm here, you might tell me what you've done with Mansfield's body.
What I... Oh, no, you're on the wrong track.
I don't know if I am or not.
Why?
Well, in the first place, you don't act to me like no guy that just wandered in out of a storm because you were lost.
What do I act like?
Like a guy in on the know. Like a guy who came here on purpose. Like a guy who maybe busted the radios and cut the phone wire so we couldn't be in touch with the outside.
You make me out a very interesting fellow.
And I seen you monkey in with the light in the trophy room just before the fuse plug burned out.
Let me put you right about that. Long?
Huh?
If you can burn out a fuse plug by screwing a bulb in and out of the socket as I was doing last night, well, it can't be done. Try it yourself.
That's a good story.
It's the truth. Somebody turned out the lights at the fuse box down in the basement.
Why?
I don't know why.
All right, then. Who?
Well, it would have to be someone free to do it. Mr. Stark and Gail Stark were supposed to be in their rooms upstairs. They could have slipped down and done it. Or Bruce Garrett. I understand Mr. Packard had let him go just a few minutes before. Or maybe it was P.O. when he went after more wood. Or for all I know, there's a stranger in the lodge.
You're doggone right there is, and you're him.
You still stick to me, do you?
Didn't you whip out of the trophy room and follow Mansfield down into the basement?
And get myself hit over the head for my trouble?
That's your story. Jack said you didn't have a mark on you.
Very well. If you insist on me being the villain, I'll put on a Hindenburg mustache and a monocle and start to sneer.
Oh, wise guy, huh? I think one of the things we're going to do after breakfast is take you apart and find out what makes y'all tick.
Bitter men have tried, my boy.
And I think you're going to tell us just exactly what you're doing here, too.
Oh, you think that, do you?
That's what I said.
Well, well. Pardon me while I go down and sustain myself with a cup of coffee.
Just a minute.
Your hand off my arm, please. Thank you. No hard feelings, of course.
The heck they ain't. Well, all I got left is Brother Bruce. Wonder how he's feeling this morning. No, Garrett seems to be a sound sleeper. Now, ain't this interesting? Better look into this. Yep, it's open. Well, I'll be doggone. Hey, Garrett, didn't you hear me a-knocking? Laying there in bed. Garrett, what's the matter with you?
Get out of here.
Now look, sport.
Get out of my room before I shoot you dead in your tracks.
You mean you got a gun in your bed there with you?
I have.
That'd be murder, though, fella, shooting a guy in cold blood.
No clown of a detective's gonna invade the privacy of my quarters. Now get out!
Okay, but I would like to get a glimpse of that shooting iron you keep talking about.
If I show it to you, get back.
Daisy!
Stop it, you fool!
That's how they spill guys out of bed in the army, and I don't see no gun neither.
If you think you can manhandle me?
Manhandled Gail Stark, didn't you? Now get up on your feet.
I'll have you behind bars for criminal assault.
Oh, hush your face. On your feet!
Take your hands off of me!
Get your clothes on and stop telling me the terrible things you're gonna do to me.
Listen, you. You listen to me. I'm gonna...
Hey.
I'm gonna...
You are a little crazy at that, aren't you?
Will people stop saying I'm crazy? I'm not. I'm not, I tell you.
Oh, no, please.
She found him.
Hello.
She found him.
Everybody come quick. Where is everybody?
Hey, something's the matter. I better get going.
Hey, Doc, what's the matter?
Sims busted loose downstairs.
Golly!
Hey, what's going on?
Mansfield, they did this to you.
Huh? They found Mansfield? Hey, he's been stabbed to death.
See? Jones, she find him in snow outdoors.
Doggone, stabbed in the heart and froze stiff.
Si, senor. This makes two frozen corpses for the lodge this winter.
Forgive me, Mansfield. Forgive me.
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton C. Morse. This was Book 25, Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge, directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Reynaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joy Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as P.O., Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Welt. Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast on May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Okay, we've had some cold. Now for a little heat. Hawk Durango is from a series in 1946, 5 years before Gunsmoke. And it was only Hawk Durango for the first, three or four episodes, and then it was changed to Hawk Larrabee. We call this episode, Dink Wants to Run with the Bad Boys.
In Sundown Wells, they used to say a person was all good or all bad. That was before Hawk Durango showed them different.
The American Radio Theater presents a lost show from the days of old-time radio. Episode 3 from Hawk Durango. Adapted from an old script by Harry Thiel and Joy Jackson. We call it, Dink Wants to Run with the Bad Boys.
Durango has been showing the folks of Sundown Wells quite a few things. among which is proof that you can run a hotel, saloon, and gaming rooms with clean beds, good whiskey, and honest wheels, and still show a profit. Of course, as he explains to his crook spotter, the management of the Gold Bar House cannot be responsible for the private lives of its patrons.
I understand that, Hawk, but this kid can cause you a lot of trouble. Here it is not yet noon, and he's nuzzling up to the bar already.
No special hours for fencing him out.
Yes, but this kid is spending money like a corn cowboy on one of your hoorah girls.
Which one?
Well, I hate to mention names, but he's been herding around with Millie McGrew.
That redhead again. How old is the kid?
I judge, being he's never had his whiskers reached, he's about 17 or 18.
About the same age as the redhead. In years, I mean.
Sure, and he wants excitement, same as her.
And she's the one girl we got who doesn't give a hoot for the money. So what's getting you?
Well, this kid has a sister who brought him up. Works in the assay shop, and every man jack in town, including lawmen and horse thieves, will stand up for her.
And every man jack that comes in here has a wife or a sister at home squawking.
But Jen Huckins has a right to squawk. A kid brother spending all his time in a joint like this?
Where else can he go? That psalm-singing reformer Doxy closed up all the other joints in town, including the pool halls.
And he'll try to close this one if we don't hurry up and do something, Hawk. Nonetheless, everybody in town knows what's happening to the kid. I can spot it just looking at him, like a steer rolls its tail before it bolts. If you ask me, he's heading for the long trail.
Tell the redhead I want to talk to her in my office.
Better talk to her considerable, Hawk.
Want to see me, Mr. Durango?
Yeah, Slim, that kid you've been throwing your loop on. I think his name's Huckins.
You mean Dink Huckins? What's wrong with him?
It's what is wrong with you that I'm getting to. He's honing for excitement, and you're giving him too much. Better dab your loop on something besides a maverick. You know what I mean. A motherless calf, that's what he is.
You don't even want me to talk to him?
I don't want you to sweet-talk him, Millie, the way you did me. When you talk to a man, it isn't mild conversation, it's manslaughter.
Jealous, aren't you, Curly? Mr. Durango.
The kid's only 18.
And I'm only 17.
All except your eyes, which are 17 times 17. Your eyes seem to know everything that's happened along the Spanish Trail since Carney and Geronimo and Kit Carson.
That kid isn't so young. He can see over the next hill.
There's nothing over the hill you haven't seen yourself. He's got a sister, and you'll sure have her in your red hair if you don't lay off.
But I can talk to any other stranger who comes in here?
Sure. Well, that is, most anyone.
If you'd come right out and say you're jealous, Curly, I'd promise not to see him again.
Jealous? All right, Slim. That's the word. I'm jealous, if you promise.
I promise, Curly. Shake?
Where did you get that bracelet?
From a gentleman friend. Just a cheap Navajo bracelet.
You know as well as I that Navajo stuff is silver. This is gold. Who gave it to you?
The gent you're jealous of.
He works for the hay and grain store. How could he get the money for a bracelet like this?
Since you cleaned up the joint, the customers have a chance at the tables. He had a run of luck at the Faro layout.
Well, that's one way he could get it, but there's another.
You mean you think he stole it?
A man would do anything for you, Millie. Even blotch a brand. I get out of here before I... Go on, get out, Slim.
Curly, you really are jealous.
Hawk, you're in for a hot spell. There's a lady in the lobby who wants to see you. Her name's Jen Huckins.
Tell her to see the room clerk, Chuck. Wait a minute, what's that name again?
Jen Huckins has a brother changing out here all the time, and she's going to put a stop to it, she says.
Did she say how?
No, but I guessed by her sweet voice, if she wants to put up a lynch posse, every man in this town will ride for her.
Show her in.
This way, lady. Mr. Durango says he'll be glad to talk to you.
Kind of deliberate way of walking.
Like a she-bear with a cub in the chaparral, Hawk. Step right in, ma'am.
Thank you.
I'll be right outside, Hawk.
Mr. Durango?
Yes, ma'am. Come right in. Have a seat.
Thank you. I can say what I have to say while I'm standing. It's about my brother, Mr. Durango.
Yeah, I've been hearing about him. has a leg over the traces. They're like that when they come of age.
I didn't come here to say gambling and good timing is wrong, Mr. Durango, but it's wrong for him. He's gotten in too deep, and it may be too late to get him out.
Why too late?
He took some money at the hay and grain store. He spent the money for a gold bracelet for one of your girls.
That makes it a pretty hard hand to draw to.
Soggy Truffet, he owns the feed store. He came and told me instead of telling the marshal.
Right decent of him. How much does your brother owe?
$90.
Here it is, ma'am.
No, that won't help. I've already offered to pay it back, but Truffet wouldn't accept it. He said my brother should be punished. He should go to the town marshal and confess, then pay the money back a little at a time.
Well, seems a better play, considering.
No, it's not better. I haven't told you the worst of it. My brother doesn't even understand he's done wrong. He says the gold bar house is full of men who've ridden with the bad bunch, all of them here gaming, dancing, or drinking. One man in particular, Brazos John, my brother looks up to him and worships him, the wildest of the whole gang.
Brazos John has paid a lot for his crimes. You might tell your brother that.
I can't tell him a thing. He says he'd rather ride with the bad bunch than go on swinging hay and grain sacks the rest of his life. He's gone crazy. He's loco. He needed a father to gentle him, not a sister. I've tried and failed. I'm going to lose him, and he's all I've got.
Miss Jen, when you first came in here, I thought you were going to give me a good tongue-whipping, and I was on the fight ready for it. But you did it in a different way. You've said it gentle and deep. Deep enough to cut clean to the bone.
I didn't say I was blaming you exactly, Mr. Durango.
Not in so many words, but I'm taking the blame and not shoving it on Brazos John or anyone else. You say he wants to ride with the bad bunch like Brazos did in Texas? Well, I'll fix that, Miss Jen.
You'll do what?
I'll see that your brother comes back to the home corral tamed just right. If he's all you've got, you aren't going to lose him.
Somehow I'm not worried as I was when I first came in, Mr. Durango.
You better come and get your brother, let's say, around sundown. I think we ought to have him gentled by then. Chuck-a-luck, come in here.
She didn't charge very loud, did she, Hawk?
Go get Hoopa Sal and Brazos John. I want to talk to the three of you. Got a job for you to do. And another thing, Chuck, when a lady like that comes into the lobby, don't puff that cigar of yours in her face.
Hawk, the cigar ain't been lit for a month. I knew she was a lady, but I figured she had an ornery streak.
Chuck, I never did believe in what they say in the West, that women are all good or all bad, but that girl's an exception.
They're in the saloon, so it won't take long to round them up.
Just a minute. Get that redhead back in here first.
You got it that bad, huh?
Well, the plan I'm thinking about needs a little bait. When she leaves, I want to see the others.
You wanted to see me again, Mr. Durango?
Yeah, Slim. About that shave tail you've been hanging with, that dink.
I promised not to see him again, Curly.
I know. But I want you to see him again.
Will you make up your mind?
I got an idea that we can hit this varmint off at the pass.
He wanted to take me outdoors, away from the saloon and the gambling hall, sweet talking out in the wind and the willows, fresh air, and being free.
Yeah. And now come to think of it, that may be just the right way to open this jackpot. Go ahead and tell him, Slim. Sing him your song. The prairies, the wind in the pines, riding high and handsome, free as the antelope sailing over the big mesa.
Some good words, Curly. Thanks. I'll sing him close to his ear.
Here they are, Hawk. Got them all rounded up.
Something wrong, son?
Another fight with Millie. Is that it, brother?
Yeah, come in and sit down, folks. Close the door, Chuck. It's about that kid who's been coyoting around the redhead. Or maybe I ought to put it the other way around. The kid Millie's been fogging down the wrong trail.
You mean the one with the fuzz on his chin and the snapping eyes? I've been watching him.
He wants to ride with the bad bunch, and it's up to us to stop him.
It's not so easy, considering my kid sister's got him bulldogged with the rest of her rough strength.
It'll be easy if you just do what I say. Now, Hoopa Sal, you and your stargazing will come in handy. And you, Brazos, the kid will believe anything you tell him. Now, Chuck, you can start it by going and telling the kid that the town marshal is out looking for him.
Mind if I interrupt a minute, Millie?
Of course I mind. I'm looking for Dink Huckins.
No, I'm right here, Two-Spot.
Oh, sure. I couldn't see you in that corner. Guess you know me, Dink. I remember you since you had to shinny up a horse's leg to get on.
Oh, cut the introduction, you old rooster, and tell me what you want.
I don't want anything except the town marshal, Bleaktop Smith, is tracking you, kid.
What the? Bleaktop Smith? Where is he?
In the hotel lobby, talking to Hawk.
Yeah, you've got a good-looking gun tied on your leg, Bright Eyes. So what are you worried about?
But I'm not gonna throw on Bleaktop. Not that I'm afraid. I could salt him easy, but what I did doesn't call for that.
What did you do?
Never mind, Millie. I got to get out of here.
Wait till I check on the marshal. You better hide in Hoopa Sal's fortune teller booth. She always hides any of the bad bunch that need her help.
The bad bunch? Yeah, that's right. I guess I am one of them now.
As soon as that gets around, just watch how everyone will step out of your way, Rattahan.
But I figure I better be going now, Millie. When I see you again, I'll bring you something. Something better than a bracelet.
I just want you, Dink. No bracelets on my arms. Just with my arms around you. I don't even want this bracelet you gave me. I'm giving it back to you.
What for? I'm no engine.
But if you're taking the long trail, you'll need money. You have to sell this. You can't eat mesquite beans.
But I don't want it.
Well, I don't want it either. Not if you borrowed the money to buy it for me. Bleaktop Smith will be camping on my neck. There. It's in your pocket. Now go on into the tent. Hoopa Sal will take care of you.
Well, I'm going, Millie. But I'll be back to you soon.
Read your future, laddie. Stars are shining, day or night. Come on in.
Can I close the tent flap?
Bub, I always close it so I can cogitate. There. I've been wondering why you never came into my tent before. Of course, you like the young ladies, don't you? But I'm not exactly a moss horn myself. Let me have your hand. Read your palm, I mean.
I came in here because someone's hunting for me.
Sure. The town marshal.
How'd you know that?
The planets yonder told me. Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn. Those are sheriff stars pinned on my shawl, hanging up there.
Sheriff stars? What are they for?
I fixed them in a circle to make a zodiac. When I compute them, it gives you fortune.
But sheriff stars, they make me see red.
You'll be seeing something else, brother. A long trail stretching from here to the sunset. The stars inviting you, calling, shining on you, with you a-riding, maybe with Brazos John.
Brazos? Me riding with Brazos John?
You see, Bleaktop Smith is after him, too. Brazos' past has caught up with him again. And he's sloping on the wing again.
Me and Brazos John riding and tying together.
Sure. Come on, Brazos. Get out from behind that shawl. This boy's straight. We can trust him.
Seems like we've both been kicked into the same dipping vats on a shake. What's the matter, Gunshy?
I didn't know you were in this tent hiding all the time.
What's this I hear about you and me riding and tying together?
Well, of course, I didn't even hope that you would want me for a partner, but...
The town marshal's against you. I'm for you. That's my code. I didn't want to see you go to jail, come out like these rodeo broncos, neither wild nor tame, just trained to be mean. What you need is to hit the open trail with me.
You mean I can ride with you, Brazos?
Hey, Sal. Sal, take a squint out there. See if we can get to the back door safe.
I've been watching, Brazos. It's safe. So adios, boys.
All right, kid, come on. Let's get out pronto. Pile on our horses.
Brazos is bouncing that young button, seems like.
It's Jen Hawkins' brother. About time they sent him home.
Everything hunk, mister?
Hunky-dory, Chuck Buck.
I'm with you, partner.
All right, kid, slap leather. Let's go.
Right behind you, Brazos.
Okay, now, we better stick our horses here, son. We can't cross that sage plain in the daytime without being seen. We'll hold up in this old mine till sundown.
What if they find our horses?
They'll never find us. I know just the spot. Up the slag dump.
I'm following you, Brazos.
Okay.
But where are we going to hide?
The ore shack on the top of this dump.
Doesn't look like much of a hideout to me.
Oh, just wait till you see. I've holed up here many times.
The door looks like it's going to fall off its hinges.
Yeah, okay, well now just pull out tumbleweed. Yeah. And mesquite against the front door before you close the door.
I feel like a gopher crawling into a hole and pulling a hole in after him. Isn't it, Brazos?
Yeah, and move those powder cans against the door.
Oh, and these specimen ore sacks. We can pile them up, too.
You got a good hunch there. You learn fast, kid. Okay, now we can sit down and roll our smokes.
Sure is hot in here.
Yeah, that's why it's good. I never figure anyone would be fool enough to hole in an oven like this. You know, when you're on the wing, always pick a place where an ordinary man can't live.
Seems like we ought to have got a place where we could breathe.
There's a little air coming in through those cracks. You see where that light's poking in through? Well, that means air.
Well, it's a good place for holding off a posse. I can see that.
Yeah, and you can see him coming if you keep your eyes on one of those cracks like I'm doing.
See anything, partner?
Oh, sure. There's some riders smoking up the trail. Lucky we hit our horses in the mesquite. They'll lose our tracks where we cross the lava bed.
I can't see any riders.
Well, they stopped down in the coulee yonder. I can tell just what they're doing by the dust in the air. When it's thinning and drifting, it means they stopped. We'll sit a while.
Oh, yeah. We ought to have brought some water.
Too late for that now. If we left this shack, they'd see us climbing down to the slag dump. We're stuck here till sundown, you and me both. We both get thirsty together, being apart.
I can't hardly believe it. A famous outlaw like you picking it up with an unknown two-spot. Of course, I can shoot pretty vivid when called upon.
Did you do any shooting when you got that money?
What money?
The money you paid for the bracelet you brought the redhead.
Of course I didn't do any shooting. It was my own money.
Oh, well, when you meet some of the bad bunch, I tell it different. They like a man who's done something.
All right. I stole the money.
No, stealing's not enough. Your new pards would like you better if you smoked somebody first. Maybe a shotgun deputy, you know. If you're riding with me, you'll have a good chance. I'll give you first shot, maybe.
First shot at what?
Gun whipping a sheriff. Do some real salting. Yeah, then see how the bad bunch looks up to you, huh?
You mean I gotta kill someone?
You want to be my partner, don't you?
Yes, but... Yes. I want to be your partner, Brazos John. But killing folks, I never done anything like that in my life. I don't know what's the matter with me. Got to have a drink. My tongue's like pulp with thorns in it. It's like cactus, my tongue is.
You'll get used to that, kid.
But those riders didn't pick up our trail. Maybe nobody will see me if I snuck out and got a can of water.
The nearest water pocket is a mile down the gulch.
Oh, I could keep undercover. There's mosquito all over.
How can I be sure you get back?
What do you mean by that, Brazos?
Maybe you get caught and then tell them where I am.
No, I wouldn't do that. I thought we were partners, Dad Burnett. You could surely trust me for that, I hope.
What do you mean, trust? What kind of words are you making up? Trust and a partner? And in this game? What's the matter with you?
Something's the matter with me. Brazos, I didn't know it would be like this. I got to get out of here. I got to go get a drink.
Now listen here, Calfhead. When you go 10 days without water, 10 days, then maybe you can cry. I've been that long, just cactus sap to drink, and so hot you have to prime yourself to spit. 10 days, and no sleep either.
No sleep?
Well, how can you sleep when there's a nest of tarantulas right over there in the corner in a hole where I couldn't get at it? Every time I dozed off, one of them would crawl over my ear. But I got to like tarantulas, regular brothers to me.
Oh, me, I don't take to them.
Well, you take to a lot of things on the trail before you're through, kid. Don't think I like those tarantulas because I'm soft-boiled about animals. I hate every animal that breathes, including horses.
Horses?
Yeah.
You hate horses?
Many a time, the nicker of a horse gave me away. Not to mention the bark of a dog.
kind of a dog I got caught in and tortured by some Yaquis. Every animal is your enemy when you're an outlaw, same as every man. But a tarantula now you get to looking at it, take one of your own kind. You get to thinking why I'm a tarantula, too.
Oh.
Besides which, that nest kept me awake while a U.S. Marshal was waiting his chance to crawl up on me.
Oh.
What you groaning about?
My head kind of pumping, you know. I didn't mean to groan, Brazos.
Get a little headache and say it hurts? Look at this. Wait, take this leather sleeve guard off and show you the scar. Long, long sprayed scar on my arm.
Sure is a humdinger of a scar, Brazos.
Yeah. Slug cork screwed up my whole arm once. I have plenty more scars all over me. Turn a light on me like these prospectors use, and you can see little blossoms all through me. Lead. Did I ever tell you anybody that it hurts? Yeah.
You're panting a little yourself, Brazos.
Yeah, well, when you ride with a bad bunch you never breathe, you pant. But you get to like it. Of course, you got to give up a few pleasures. For one, you'll never see your sister again.
You mean I can't see Jen?
Well, that's always the way they track you, you know, by watching your folks.
But I got to see Jen. Just once in a while. I got to. She's the only thing I have in the world.
What's the matter, son? You haven't said anything for a long time, except bleat like a smelly sheep.
It's this heat. I'm not bleating. I can stand the heat. Something else in my head.
You told me that once about your head pumping.
Well, it isn't the pumping. It's what I'm thinking about. What you said about my sister, about my not seeing her again.
Partner, you better get that straight once and for all. You can't have a sister in this game, or a mother, or a wife, or any folks whatsoever. Not even a red-headed sweetheart.
You mean I can't ever see Millie again?
I said your folks were in the past. Of course, you have me. I'll be a brother to you. Everything that's mine is yours. Which reminds me, did you spend all your money for that bracelet for the redhead?
What do you want to know for?
Well, since we're partners, we'll start the whack up right away. How much money you got?
All I got is the bracelet. Millie gave it back to me.
Want to see it? Yeah, I said let's see it, sheep eyes.
Oh, I'm too tired to scrap, Brazos. There it is.
Mm-hmm. Guess we can't whack this up, can we?
You mean you're keeping it for yourself?
You're gasping for breath, your eyes are bleary, and you're doddering. Why, you couldn't even see to shoot if we got caught in here.
What's that got to do with my bracelet?
I'll tell you what. Whenever any of the bad bunch gets wounded, we just whack up their share and tell them to fan out and get. Every man for himself in the game, brother. That's why I'm a success. And every singing, riding, and rollicking bandit you meet is like me. Tarantulas, that's the name. Did I hear something about trusting a partner?
I'm burning up. I'm burning alive.
I can't understand you, kid. You want the long trail. You want a regular like me as a guide and a friend. We got to a safe, snug spot like this, and you go meeching. Why, this is clover and filigree compared to what you'll be getting for weeks at a time. All the weeks I've been on the long trail, I spent half of them holding up like this. Only this, this is a luxury, what I mean.
If I could only get water. My head, it's killing me.
Keep your chin up, kid. Your head's rolling.
I can't help it.
Oh, snap out of it. Come on. I guess we do need some water. I'll have to carry you to it. Hello there, Chuck.
What you got slung on your saddle, Brazos?
Just sick. Terrapin. Too sick to fork his own horse, so we're riding double.
Hey, Hawk, come out here. They're back.
Shove these horses away from the trough, Chuck. This kid needs water more than they do.
Brazos, you're going to dump him in the horse trough?
What are you trying to do, Brazos? Drown him?
Just loosen some water through him, Hawk. He needs it. Yeah, so do I. We're plumb alkalied, all two of us.
When I ask you to do something for me, Brazos, you sure do it complete.
Come on, kid. Better get out of that trough and give the horses a chance.
Here, I'll help you out, kid. Chuck, you go call his sister. Now, can you stand up?
Yeah, I got a hold of this hitching rack for a minute. A little dizzy.
Funny thing happened, Hawk. I thought the town marshal was camping on my trail, but it turned out to be some prospectors heading up the abandoned ten load. Get what I was saying, Hawk?
I think I get you. Go on.
He told me the marshal wasn't after me at all. Somebody else from Texas that they're hunting, so I come home.
And you came home too, kid?
Yes, I got to see my sister. I want to see Jen.
She'll be here in a minute. Better sit down on the boardwalk. Will a drink help? A real one?
No, thanks. I took too much water.
Shouldn't tank up the wet way. Make you sick.
It's gotten around the Gold Bar house that you lined out because the marshal was after you. How come you changed your mind?
Oh, Brazos John changed it.
What do you mean? I didn't say anything. Still want to ride and tie with me? I'm willing. I can hide you right here in town.
No, I don't want to hide anymore. I want to go home.
Dink, you poor boy, what's happened to you?
Sis, nothing's happened to me. I just took a passenger out into the desert, that's all. We forgot our canteens.
But you fell in the horse trough.
All right, I fell in. And I'm going home to change my clothes. I'll say it before you say it.
It's like this, Miss Jen. Brazos here says your brother wants to ride and tie with him. Seems like the boy had a hunch the town marshal wants to talk to him about something.
Well, if it's about a gold bracelet, you better take it, son. You may need it.
You mean you ain't keeping it?
Well, we aren't partners. That means no whack-up anymore, so take it.
Thanks, Brazos.
Of course, if Dink still wants to ride with the bad bunch, no one's stopping him. If he wants us to, we can hide him from Bleak Top Smith. The Gold Bar House has always been a refuge for kids like him. I'm leaving it up to you, Dink, to choose what you want.
I know what I want. I want to talk to the town marshal.
Dink, you mean...
I'll go alone, sis, right now. I'll face what I've got to face.
Thank you, Hawk Durango, from the bottom of my heart.
Ah, thank Brazos John. He rolled this game just right.
Mr. Durango, I'd like to ask you a little question. Who threw that kid in the horse trough?
Yeah, whoever did it doesn't matter so much as who gave the orders, does it, Slim?
You mean you ordered it? Well, of all the half-portioned, sheep-headed bullies...
I just didn't want him coyoting around you anymore, Slim. Maybe you know why.
But sawing off a trick like that on a kid who isn't even grown up? Oh, you mean...
He was grown up enough to make me jealous, Slim. Isn't that a reason?
No, it isn't. Well, maybe half a reason.
So what's the other half?
That angel sister of his.
Then we're both crazy jealous, Slim.
I'll always be that way, Curly. Whenever I see or think of you.
Smiling, Slim?
Whenever you ask me, Curly.
You've been listening to a lost episode of Hawk Durango, presented by American Radio Theater, produced and directed by Joy Jackson. In our cast, you heard Greg Porter as Hawk Durango, Terry Elder as Snoop, Beth Schlansky as Millie McGrew, Dan Schindler as Dink Hawkins, Mary Moore Campagna as Jen Hawkins, Dave Leese as Chuck, Ivan Curry as Brazos John, Linda Rasmussen as Hoopa Sal, Michael Moki O'Reilly as the narrator. Other roles performed by the cast. Additional support by Pat McNally and Kim Turner. Sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Mike Wheeler. Music by Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. This episode was originally broadcast on July 19, 1946. The show was radio's first half-hearted attempt at an adult Western drama. Its producer-director, William N. Robeson, went on to produce Gunsmoke 5 years later. The first 6 weeks of the show, it was titled Hawk Durango, and then later changed to Hawk Larrabee. Elliot Lewis and Barton Yarbrough frequently were switched back and forth between the lead and the sidekick, Brazos. I'm Pat McNally, your announcer. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Oh, but wait! Okay, we were hot, and now we're going to go to some more cold. Here's episode 8 of I Love a Mystery, Frozen Corpse Lodge.
American Radio Theater presents I Love a Mystery.
O'clock in the morning, with the snow drifted almost up to the second-story windows of J. Irving Stark's hunting lodge, high in the Sierras, somewhere on the California-Nevada border. Snowbound in Frozen Corpse Lodge, and more snow falling. And locked in the tool room at the back of the lodge is the corpse of a murdered man, a friend of Gale Stark's, and the fourth man to die in the last month after she had kissed him. Gale had kissed him a friendly goodbye in Reno day before yesterday. He was found by P.O. the caretaker, stabbed and frozen in a snowbank between the lodge and the stable. That is why Jack, Doc, and Jerry Booker are here over the weekend, to find the reason for the sudden epidemic of violent deaths among the young men Gale knows. But why is Mansfield, the aged butler, dead, and by whose hand? Jack and Doc have gathered the whole group together for investigation.
Now then, we've got the whole group together, and I don't want anyone to interrupt my questioning, unless he knows positively someone is telling a deliberate lie in answer to my questions.
Oh, the big, big question and answer, man.
Shut up, Garrett. You ready with your notebook, Jerry?
Shoot when ready.
Pio, you and Jones are first.
See?
Yes, sir.
No, turn so you're facing me, Jones.
Yes, sir.
That's better. Now, I want to know exactly how you happened to discover the body of Mansfield.
But I did not find Mansfield, senor. These drawings here...
All right. You keep quiet then, P.O.
See?
Go ahead, Jones.
Well, there ain't much to tell, mister. Ian, you know how the snow's drifted up against the house, clean up to the second-story windows?
Yes.
Well, P.O. here said he had to tunnel through the drift so he could get out to the stables and take care of the horses.
See? Horses must be fed and have a drink of water.
Go on, Jones.
Well, I ain't shoveled snow since I was a kid back in Wisconsin, and I thought it might be kind of fun, so I offered to help.
Uh-huh.
So, while Pio was getting wood out of the shed to build up the fires, I started tunneling through the drift, and the first thing I knew, there was the old boy's foot sticking out of the drift.
Oh, poor Mansfield.
And that's all?
That's all.
Pio.
See?
Are you in the habit of letting someone else do your work for you?
Monsignor!
Are you?
Senor Fuckert, that is most unfair thing anybody ever said to me.
Just answer my question.
For 2 years, I have been caretaker for this Frozen Corpse Lodge. Is that not so, Senor Stark?
Yes, P.O.
I have been good caretaker. Yes? No?
I've had no complaint.
Have I ever asked anybody to do what is my job to do? No.
You let Jones tunnel through the snow for you.
See? Because he asked to tunnel. Because it make him remember when he was little boy... But I do not ask him to do it.
Okay.
I don't get what you're driving at, Packard.
Ben, I ask no one to speak unless he knows someone is lying. To your knowledge, is someone lying?
No.
Then keep still.
I still think we have a right to know where your questions are leading.
Gee, I do also.
Jack, you want me to persuade Mr. Ben a little?
No, I'll answer his question. I wanted to know if P.O. put Jones to work on the tunnel deliberately.
Why?
So that it would be Jones and not he who found Mansfield's body.
But Mr. Packard, that would mean that P.O. knew that Mansfield was there?
Exactly.
Senor, you say I killed Mansfield. You say I put this poor old man out in snow.
Sit down, P.O.
Senor, if you say this thing...
Sit down! Now then, somebody in the lodge here has committed 2 murders. Maybe it was P.O. and maybe it wasn't. But... he's just as much a suspect as Jones, or Ben, or Stark, or Bruce Garrett here.
Or Gale. Hey, Packard.
Bruce, how could you?
Yes, or Miss Stark, if you like.
You don't think it might be someone outside, someone we don't know about?
Aren't you the man who told me we were utterly and entirely cut off from the outside world?
Yes, I did.
Well, there's your answer to that.
But, Signor, why is it you pick on me? Why did you pick on Pio? I am only caretaker.
I'm not picking on you. I'm taking you apart just as I'm going to take everyone else in this place apart. And you'll have to admit, Pio, it would look pretty bad if you'd been the one to discover the body of Mansfield this morning after bringing in Phil Ogden's corpse last night.
Yeah, the guy who always knows where the body's buried.
Ah, I see what you're getting at. A very good point.
But the thing I don't understand is why anyone would want to kill poor old Mansfield. What was the object?
A very good question. Would anyone like to answer that, Miss Stark?
No.
How about you, Garrett?
Don't throw any of your insinuating questions in my direction, Packard. I don't know anything, and I don't want to know anything.
Well, then, I'll have to tell you myself.
You know?
Yes. Mansfield was killed because he had a story of murder to tell me.
What's that?
Yes. He was only waiting for the opportunity of getting to me. He was killed when he was, because he was to have been the next person I was calling into the tap room last night for questioning.
Oh, no.
Amazing.
Somebody deliberately blew the fuses, knowing Mansfield would go to the basement and put in new ones. In the dark, this person stabbed the old man and tossed his body in the snow.
Did you find where it was done, Jack?
Yes, on the first landing going down into the basement, where we found Mr. A.J. Benn a few minutes later.
Is that true? How do you know that's where the murder happened?
Because there was blood on the landing, and there was blood on your coat where you'd fallen down in it. I see you're not wearing the same coat this morning.
No.
No, he's wearing one of mine. He said his coat had been torn.
Uh-huh. In spite of the fact you claim to have been attacked, there was no sign of a cut or abrasion any place on you. Therefore, the blood must have been from Mansfield.
I assure you, I was attacked. Do you think I'd have laid down in a pool of blood on my own account?
You might.
That's nonsense.
No. Perhaps in the dark you didn't realize the blood was there. Or if you murdered Mansfield and it got blood on you in the act, you might lie down in it. Be a good explanation. Anyway, I want a good look at that coat after we finish this.
Yeah, if you wish.
Now then, before we leave Jones entirely, one more question. You still maintain Mr. Stark here phoned the Great Western Agency in Reno and said he wanted a new butler and the agency sent you?
Yes, and you can bet your sweet life I wish they never had.
And you maintain you didn't put in such a call, Mr. Stark?
I did not.
Okay, that's something we'll never know the truth about until we get back and check with the agency. Now then, Mr. Stark, this is going to be painful, but I've got to know the truth.
Yes?
You told us that Gail is not your daughter, but your stepchild.
Yes.
But you didn't tell us that you have no money in your own right, that every cent you have is in reality Gail's, and that it will be taken from you when Gail marries.
Who told you? This is abominable.
No one told me. I got it out of the papers in the safe in your study.
You opened my safe last night?
The doc did. He's good at things like that.
I'll have the law on you.
Don't bother with that sort of talk. If you're the murderer, I'll have the law on you. If you're not, you'll thank me for doing everything I can to head him off before this is over. You admit your finances are as I state?
Yes.
Then all this lodge, your estate in Hollywood, everything is actually Gale's.
Mr. Packard, you have no right to humiliate my father.
Just a minute, Gail. And that is the real reason why you have taken Gail into your home since her mother's death. Because actually, this is Gail's home and she is befriending you.
That's not true. Until I married, Jay Irving has the full use of all the money and property left by my mother.
Exactly the point I want to make. If Jay Irving Stark can keep his stepdaughter from marrying, he will enjoy all his wealth indefinitely.
That is all quite true. But will you tell me why it is necessary to drag out before all these people to my utter humiliation?
Because it's the very best motive in the world to explain the murders of the three young men in Hollywood and Philip Ogden up here.
Hey, wait a minute, Jack. They ain't the guys who were going to marry Gail. There's the boy right over yonder. Mr. Bruce Rotten Spoilt Garrett.
Yeah,
The only word of intelligence spoken this morning.
He's the boy what's a-gonna marry Gale, so if Mr. Stark's a-killin' off potential bridegrooms, why ain't he giving Garrett 40 whacks?
Yes, Packard, that's a very important question. Why haven't I killed Garrett? Who, by the way, is the only man Gale's ever been engaged to in her life.
I don't know yet. There's something ugly here.
Ugly?
Yes. Between you and Garrett.
Listen to him.
I don't know what it is. There's something between the two of you that's so rotten it smelled the minute I came into this place. Something nasty and unhealthy, and your stepdaughter, Gale Stark, is being made the goat.
No. No, really.
You're afraid of something. Perhaps you don't know what it is, but it's something that's cast a shadow over you, and you are afraid to talk, because whether Stark loves you or not, you love him. And you'll do anything he wants if he tells you he's in trouble.
No, that's not true.
You'll even go as far as engage yourself to an undisciplined, utterly despicable playboy who shows very definite signs of mental deficiency.
Jack, look out!
Hey! Jerry, you hurt?
Don't move, Garrett. I've got you covered.
The mirror broke right over your head. Are you hurt?
No, I guess not, but I'll be combing looking glass out of my hair for a week.
Keep him covered, Ben. What do you throw at me?
Here it is. Pool ball. Well, I'll be doggone if it ain't the black old eight ball itself. Boy, if he'd ever popped you with that old pool ball, you'd have looked mighty sick, son.
Yes. Jerry, there's a little cut on your neck.
There is? Oh, blood!
Miss Stark, take her upstairs and put some iodine and a piece of cotton on it.
Yes, of course, but Bruce, you must be insane!
Why, you little smooth-faced toot-timing!
Hold it, Garrett.
Come on, Jerry.
Boy, is friend Garrett in a temper.
Now then, everybody sit down. Sit down, Garrett.
I will not sit down and listen to myself continuously being referred to as a madman. Oh, I will fight every man in this house. I'll break every piece of furniture in this place before I'll sit down and take what you've been handing out.
Son, you keep on raving like that, and we're going to have to put you in a straitjacket.
Just try it. Try it. Just try it.
Look, Garrett, I'll make you a bargain.
Yeah,
if what? If you stop all this foolishness and cooperate with us, I'll guarantee that nobody will again mention the word madness, nor any of its synonyms or words of association. Is that fair enough?
I don't believe your word's any good.
How about giving us a try?
Well...
Okay, everybody sit down. Sit down, Jones.
Yeah.
Hey, where's Pio?
Here I am, senor.
What? Where?
We'll all be doggone under the couch over there. Come on out, Pio. War's over.
Yeah, well, for goodness sakes. I am glad about that, you betcha. How I get under here? It's so tight a place, I don't know.
Here, I'll give you a hand. Can't have you stuck under the couch. Let's go.
See?
Oh, there you are.
See? My goodness. But you almost pulled my arm off. Did anybody get shot to pieces?
No, no one got shot.
Which brings up the point, Ben. What are you doing with a gun?
I always carry a gun.
Uh-huh. Mind if I have a look at it?
Why not?
And about the way you draw that there shooting iron, son, there's only one other hombre I ever seen who could draw a gun that fast from that stance.
That's so?
Yep, he's from Texas. Real rattlesnake of a guy. I think they got him over yonder there in Alcatraz Island now, if I ain't mistaken.
That's so?
That's quite a gun.
Like it?
Uh-huh. So much. I think I'll keep it for a while.
No.
Yes.
Hand me that gun.
Well, I'll be doggone if he ain't got its mate. Mm. Honest to goodness, two-gun Western man.
Hand me that gun.
With the greatest pleasure.
Thanks. And what makes you think I'm a Western man?
Ain't no son of a gun east of Texas can handle guns like that. No man.
Oh, thanks. Look, Packard, no hard feelings, but I did want my gun back.
Oh, quite all right. Think nothing of it. But there is one thing.
Yes?
I would certainly have liked to have got a description of the man there chasing in that manhunt on the outside.
Manhunt?
Yes, we caught some of it on the air just before all the radios were smashed and the phone line was cut.
Yeah, I wonder who could have done that.
Oh, no!
Jack! Doc!
Oh, no!
Gale, stop it!
Listen!
Doc! There's another dead man up here! He's lying on my
caught dead man lying on her bed. Now who's crazy?
This has been a presentation of a lost old-time radio show by American Radio Theater. I Love a Mystery was written by Carlton C. Morse. This was Book 25, Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge, directed by Marge Lutton, assisted by Greg Porter, and produced by Joe Jackson. In our cast, you heard Cole Hornaday as Jack Packard, Reynaud LaBeouf as Doc Long, with Joe Jackson as Jerry Booker, Melinda Maines as Gail Stark, Michael Moki O'Reilly as Pio, Greg Porter as A.J. Ben and the narrator, Dan Schindler as J. Irving Stark, Kim Turner as Mansfield. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Welt. Terror of Frozen Corpse Lodge was originally broadcast on May 22 to June 14, 1951. I'm Pat McNally, whom you also heard as Bruce Garrett and Jones the Butler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Ah, gee, that's all I've got time for today. Please stop by our website, www.AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more podcasts from us. We put up a new one every month. See you next time on Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Over to you, Louise.
Okay, Joy. Thanks a lot, and great work as usual. Now, it's time for me to become the bad boy of MSS, because it is that time again when I have to wrap things up and shut things down for this week's broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. But not to worry, we will be back again next week, and you know how to find us, where to find us, and when to find us. So, as usual, if you have any questions, complaints, requests, maybe even a comment or two, please address them not to me, because I won't be getting those emails, but to MikeAmelli@earthlink.net. Yes, the MSS director. He can be found at MikeArthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.